And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to a snowy edition of the Warriors All 82 Warriors Plus Minus podcast. I am staring outside my hotel window in Minneapolis and it is dumping snow. The Warriors were rushing out of town hoping to kind of beat this weather a little bit and get to Miami where it's going to be like 80 degrees, but it is, this is about as late in the year as I've been in snow. I don't know about you.
We normally used to take this trip in December. So, yeah, to be late March, early April, kind of wild when you think about it. But, you know, hey, global warming, right?
I'm not even going to go there.
You ain't taking my bait.
No. Warriors lost.
I thought you were going to be like, you know who else was cold?
I don't know.
That was set up for a terrible segue.
What was the final? 114-110, something like that. They played pretty well. You know, this wasn't a bad performance. It was much better than the Pacers game, which they, you know, they spent half their afternoon today watching the film on the Pacers game and were just, you know, you could tell they were impacted about how bad it looked. Steph said he knew it was bad in the moment, but then he watched the film and realized it was 10 times worse, in part because he was one of the biggest culprits in that game with the, you know, horrible transition defense. But, you know, again, played better, good first quarter, focused, 18 Minnesota points in the first quarter. Naz Reid probably scored about 14 of them, but 9 turnovers and 46 at half, you know, held the lead most of the game, but gave it away in the fourth. And, you know, there's relevant topics to, you know, discuss, but again, not a horrible loss, not even that surprising a loss, but it just kind of spotlights again where they are right now, which is nearly dead in this season.
Yeah, it's not that they lost per se. It's that they had a chance to win. Like, they had it. And they had a hand in losing the game. That's the part that I think is unsettling with people. Obviously, Minnesota's really good. If they go out there and wax the Warriors, nobody would be surprised. And the fact that they kind of took over the game late is not that surprising. But this felt like a game where the Warriors were playing well. They should have won this game. They could have won the game. Even Draymond said they should have won this game. And because they didn't do a few things, they lose it. And it's very fitting with the theme of the season of just game squandered. This wouldn't have altered my top 10 list from the other day of like like bad losses. But
that Pacers game could have, though.
Pacers game probably could have, absolutely. But this one, their contributions to it is the problem. Like, this team is supposed to be clutch. They're supposed to win close games. Like, they have championship pedigree, but this season, it's the opposite. I mean, they look like the team that hasn't been there before. And the other team seems to look great. Like, I was watching the Lakers-Pacers game. I mean, the Lakers dropped 150 on the Pacers. On the very Pacers, the Warriors couldn't score against at home.
They had four guys score 25 plus. Which,
I mean, that's that right there is like an indictment on like where the Warriors are. Like that's just crazy. But tonight was a game they could have won. I think Draymond said it best. Like, you got to win the games that you're supposed to win. And then you got to win some of the games that steal some of the games you're not supposed to win. But they do the opposite. They lose games they're supposed to win. And this game, they should have won it. They had control of the game. They had the better play. They were playing better. Minnesota doesn't have Karl-Anthony Towns. So you could argue they've got like the best players on the court. And they didn't do it.
No, and, you know, I think, again, this was a more energetic defensive effort. It was a more, you know, locked in, urgent, just vibe than the Pacers game, because it couldn't have really been much worse than the Pacers game. But there was just a lot of coverage breakdowns in the second half. And again, it wasn't because they weren't trying. It was just like Trayce Jackson-Davis was switching when Clay didn't think he was switching in the doubling over here. And then, you know, Gobert's getting a dive to the rim open, or two guys accidentally go one way and Anthony Edwards flares away from him wide open for three, or Kuminga doesn't get over a Gobert screen and Trayce Jackson-Davis is sagged too far back and they let Mike Conley walk into a huge three. And, you know, Draymond blamed it post. He talked about how quiet they were post game and just how many defensive breakdowns they had. And it's too many against a team as good as the Wolves. So, in some ways, is it, but that's about, like, you know, they're not good enough. You know, again, Trayce Jackson-Davis has shown a lot of encouraging stuff his rookie season, but he's a rookie center in the NBA. And they have a third year wing who was a raw prospect coming in, Kuminga, who's now getting 30-plus minutes and has a really bright future, but is going to make, you know, defensive errors. And, you know, they're starting a rookie who's actually one at times one of their sharper glue guys, right, Pajemski. But they're just – they're really young at spots. Their old guys have maybe seen their skills, their prime erode a little bit this season. And I just think we're continually being reminded that this is just not a good enough team.
Yeah, but good enough for what though? Like, I don't think you have to win a championship to win these games.
No,
like that's the thing. Like, Minnesota may not win a championship. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could still get a requisite amount of wins. You could still be representative of what you have on the court. I don't think their record and their performances in these games represent what they have. I think they're squandering.
Yes.
You know, so to me, it's not like, hey, you know what? They're just a 10 seed. Like, nah, they're probably a 6 seed that's playing like a 10 seed. And even if you decide, which we've decided long ago, they're not winning a championship, like, that's still not acceptable. Like, to me, they're just a better team than this, than a team that can't put together the win streak. I mean, I guess we can't say it now, but we would say they are better than the Rockets, right? But in the end, are they? The Rockets without Sengun, to be, like, crazy about it, right? Like, but the Rockets can somehow put together. I think the issue, the main issue, as I see it, is no matter how good you are defensively, like, the league is loaded. People get buckets, and the Warriors just have a hard time matching that. Like you're going to have stretches where other teams are going to do it. Like, maybe you don't give up 21 threes, but Minnesota's going to score. They're a good offensive team. When it's time to, they have a hard time matching bucket for bucket. And that, to me, seems like the bigger issue, is they're waiting on guys who just can't deliver. And they don't have a way to go. So you sit Steph for 6 minutes. Or I'm sorry, 5 minutes in the start of fourth quarter, like, you can't get buckets. He sits for 9 minutes bridging two quarters. You get outscored by 13. Like, that, for a team that is at best like a 6 seed and currently a 10 seed, like, you can't afford those stretches, and that's what they keep having, because I just don't think they're as good in those moments. Yeah, that's pretty much. I think they need to be better offensively. I think this idea of they're going to go out and be some lockdown team, that's just not who they are. As a matter of fact, like, actually nobody is that. Like, the best teams in the league get buckets at the end of the game. They run offense. They can score. You're going to get some stops here and there, but you're not shutting good teams down at the end of games. The Warriors have a hard time getting buckets in those moments, and that's why they're good enough to play with any team. And they also blow a lot of these games.
Let's talk about the Steph rotation pattern tonight. You know, so he plays the full fourth quarter against the Pacers and gets up to 35 minutes, which, you know, led them to want to minimize his minutes somewhat tonight, it sounds like, and didn't want to play him the full fourth. So he enters the fourth quarter having only at 23 minutes. And I remember seeing 23 entering the fourth. He'd sat the final 407 of the third and thinking, man, they can get him back in early here in the fourth. You know, you could play him 9 fourth-quarter minutes and he was still going to only be at 32, which is – that's typically their conservative number for him is 32. So he is sitting there. They're up three entering the fourth, and then Minnesota hits two threes quick, and then there's like kind of a little bit of a back and forth. But, you know, they're suddenly down four with I think it was like 8:56, and they call timeout. It was after a Gobert dunk and then a Conley layup. And it, do you remember watching it in that timeout? Because I definitely personally remember thinking, like, this is the time to go back to Steph. 9 minutes gets him up to 32. They're down four. It felt like it was slipping at that point. They don't go back to Steph. Two more minutes, you know, come off the clock, and they, you know, the lead bumps all the way up to eight. And it felt a little too late, even in the moment. Clay hit some threes. They kind of got back in it. Like, there was chances late. Obviously, they had a chance to tie it with a three in the end. But, you know, Steve Kerr says postgame, and anyone could go watch, you know, kind of his explanation of why. And, you know, they're trying to keep Steph fresh and the condensed schedule and all that. And he said he didn't think those 2 minutes changed the game. And we'll never know if they did or not. You know, you could have put Steph back in, and Minnesota still could have taken the lead from 4-8. But he only played 29 minutes and 51 seconds tonight.
I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So I agree and disagree with Steve Kerr on this. Like, I understand what he's doing and why he's doing it. And, you know, this is the part if I could rant for a minute that's so irritating about Warriors fans on Twitter. It's like they want you, Anthony Slater, as the reporter there, to ask Steve Kerr 15 questions about why he does this thing that he does. And they just want you to rage at him. But we know the reasoning, like, so you could disagree with the reason, but we know the reason, especially coming off the game where you said they watched all that film and Steph wasn't good. Steve Kerr's thinking is when Steph is tired, he's not as good of a player and it hurts them defensively. So if you could get fresh, if you get a fresh Steph down the stretch, that's your best chance to win. That's what he's thinking. Like, if once he gets to 36, 37, 38, he's not as sound, right? Like, it's not that good of a Steph. You're more prone to turnovers, etc. This is what Steve Kerr is thinking, that he's better when he's fresh. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I disagree with this idea that four more minutes is going to make any difference, right? like, Like, that's where you use your timeouts. That's where you use, like, your rotations and, you know, your sets to get them the breaks and the rest. Like, this is functionable. But even a worse Steph on the court is better for you because you can't score without him, and that's the problem. So even if Steph is not the main focal point, Jonathan Kuminga needs him on the court. Klay Thompson needs him on the court, right? Like, this idea that you can create all of these great offensive weapons with no body who terrifies the defense is a flawed concept. Like, they'll get some buckets. They can have a good 6-minute stretch. They're not going to go out here and get 115 without Steph Curry. And that's pretty much what they got to do to win. So to me, and I've been talking about this, he needs to be sitting games instead of worrying about 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there, like you saving him. Like, nah, sit him a game then. You better off playing Steph 36 minutes in a game he plays and then resting him at some point than hoping you can survive for 30 minutes. To me, that's what I'm thinking. I know what he's thinking, and you could say his philosophy is right. It's a 1-point game in the final minutes, and they're in the game, which is what you want to hope for, and they got arrested Steph. But they're just not good enough. In those situations in the past, you'd bet on the Warriors in that situation. This season, you're betting on the other team. The other team has more playmakers. The other team has more shot makers. The other team has more reliable places to go for offense. And the Warriors are kind of like shooting the dice, seeing what they got every night. So I understand his philosophy. I just think devaluing that 9 minutes that Steph is out is actually not the solution, right? This idea that, like, yeah, we can give up a 13-point run because later we'll get it back is not how you can think with this team. It's like every minute, every run stop, it matters, right? Everything has the opportunity to break this team. Like, they have no room for error. They got to play it all well. If you got a 12-point lead, you need to nurse that thing. You need to milk it, right? Like, you can't just be like, well, it's a 1-point game. At the end, like, no, they have better players. Like, that's what it is. They're a better team. So, to me, that's the flaw in the logic. You play, if Steph is playing 30 minutes, you might as well play him 34. Like, what's the difference? He's like, remember we were talking about this before where Steph, what was it, the game where he didn't play that much? And the response I kept getting was, oh, well, if you do the warm-ups and the prep and all that stuff, even if you don't have play that many minutes.
They go out when they lost.
That's right, blown out, yeah. That was what they said. Like, yeah, but it still counts as playing. I mean, he's already playing. Like, he's already burned the mileage, right? It's already done it. So bringing him in at that point, you said, doesn't change anything. Right. It doesn't, like, okay, now he's rested. Now he's safe because he only played 30 instead of 34. Like, no, if you're that concerned about him, sit him some games, play him 36 this game, and then sit him another game during the 5 games and 7 nights, if it's that big of a deal. But if you have a chance to win the game and Steph is not tired and he's actually looking pretty good, to me, you don't worry about that at that point. Sit him on one of those back-to-backs. If it's that big of a deal, if he's that, like, vulnerable to fatigue, then you don't play him 70-plus games or whatever he's on pace for. So that's, to me, is where I disagree with the logic. Play him tonight, sit him next game then, right? But this night, you had a chance to win the game. This night, he had it going. This night, it was creating all kind of stuff because Jaden McDaniels is focused on him, and they got the good screen and roll actions going. They got Gobert in action. This was the night you play him. I think you start Steph in the fourth quarter anyway to avoid this. Sit him in the middle if you have to. If you need to sit him for 3 minutes, 4 minutes, sit him in the middle, then bring him back. But this idea of you could go this significant time without Steph and it doesn't matter what happened, like, that matters tremendously. So I know he said it doesn't count or it didn't hurt him, or that's not the reason they lost. That's dang near a quarter. Like, if you have a bad quarter, you can look and be like, yeah, that quarter is why we lost. They played 9 minutes without Steph and got cooked. Like, that mattered a lot, actually.
I'll just say, Steph clearly seemed to think that just that 2-minute stretch may, you know, that could have flipped the game. You know, if at the 6 minute mark, that 4 point Minnesota lead is set as a 1 point Minnesota lead instead of an 8 point Minnesota lead. And that's a 7 point swing just because, you know, he hits a three, whatever, within that, or, you know, they don't give up, you know, however the game plays out. Also, he was antsy over there. And you could tell he was surprised that he didn't go back in after the first time out. You almost wonder, you know, if he should, you know, and I'm sure you saw his post game press conference, but, you know, does he tap him on the shoulder and, hey, I don't know why Steph doesn't do that.
Like, I don't know why Steph doesn't just get up and walk to the scorer's table. Like, you blame Bob McKillop for that. Like, he doesn't, that's just not who he is as a player. I could tell by how he answers you, he wasn't. Like, when you asked the question, like the first one, like, he took a minute. Mm-hmm. And you could see him saying, let me find the right way to say this. But you could tell once he did that, I was like, oh, yeah, he clearly wasn't happy. Because sometimes, you know, they'll have this thing and then Steph will be like, yeah, we talked about it. I understand the logic. You know what I'm saying? So I'm thinking maybe this is some Rick Celebrini thing. I don't know. But once he paused when you asked the question, I was like, oh, no, he ain't on board with this. He like that was crazy. I don't know why he doesn't do that, Slater. I don't know. He's never done it. He's never been the one to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, tonight, it just, who knows if it flipped the game, but when you feel it in the moment, when, you know, us as observers are watching it and going like, all right, he's coming in after this timeout, the obvious time to put him in, and he'll only get up to 32, and then he doesn't come in for two more minutes, and then the lead or the deficit doubles. Like, I mean, it's obvious thing to point the spotlight on.
Look, you know, Slater, I'm feeling like you go into the fourth quarter only up three. I don't know how they're comfortable with that. Like, that's like the, so at that point, the game is in the hands of that second unit. So, like, I mean, you saw it against Indiana. Obviously, it didn't work. And I think that played a major factor in tonight's game that they started.
Yeah, and can I say,
the fourth quarter, it didn't work.
Probably the worst transition defensive possession of the Indiana game was Steph with about 2.5 minutes left, 3 minutes left, whatever it was, not getting back, jogging back as Andrew Nembhard races past him and gets an easy transition layup, and Steph kind of throws his hands in the air like, whoops. And, you know, that's a potential fatigue thing because he played the first nine minutes of the quarter. So,
no question.
Yeah, again, I didn't expect him to start the fourth quarter. I just expected him to come in at the 9 minute mark when things were slipping, and he didn't, and it got worse. So that was where, you know, it felt like the error came in. But, you know, again, overall semantics considering, like, big picture, like, they win tonight, they're still probably going to be a 9-10 seed. They lose tonight, they're still probably going to be the 10 seed.
I don't know. They lose tonight, it's, you're looking, that 11 is looking daunting right now.
So
I don't know.
Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this, because I think in over the next 2 days, it's going to feel like Houston is about to overtake them, because Houston is playing, I believe, at home tomorrow night against the Blazers. And that is a very likely win, which would get them within a half game. And then let's say, look, the Warriors play Tuesday, Wednesday, Miami, Orlando. It's possible by, you know, middle of the day Wednesday, or, you know, later in the day Wednesday, Warriors are a half game back.
And and 11. Yep.
But I'm going to the Rockets schedule right now. This is the part that, two things. Number one, the Warriors have already clinched the tiebreaker. So that's just like an extra game, even though they're only one ahead right now, they're essentially two ahead. And then Wednesday night, the Rockets are in Oklahoma City, and then they have a stretch of games starting on March 31st. That is Mavericks, Timberwolves, Warriors, obviously a big head-to-head game, Heat, Dallas, Orlando. That is a really tough, like, 6-7 game stretch. And sure, you can say, hey, look, the Rockets are playing as good as anybody. They've won 8 in a row, whatever. But again, these wins are Washington twice, Chicago, Utah, Portland, San Antonio in there. Like, Houston's beating up on bad teams. They're playing well, but I just think, if you really look at the schedule, you know the Warriors have the tiebreaker. That head-to-head game is going to matter a lot. But I personally, regardless of how they are playing or aren't playing, you would say right now, I think everything still really leans towards the Warriors very likely being the 10. Is that an accomplishment? I don't know. But I think the trend is not heading as much towards the Rockets as it may appear.
I don't know, man. What happens if they lose the first three games of this road trip? Do they just mail it in?
Well, then they're playing at Charlotte, at San Antonio.
You telling me they can't lose either one of them games? I mean, we've seen this team lose games that you win, right? And, you know, they could very well go beat Miami and Orlando. Like, we've seen them do that, too. Also, like, people have been expecting the Rockets to fall apart after Şengün. Like, to me, if it's up to the other team, as far as the Warriors are concerned, I think you could bank on the other team getting it done, because that's just the fate of the Warriors, right? Like, people are going to make open shit. Like, Naz Reid is not missing. Like, that's how it is for the Warriors. So, they've got to win games. I do feel like they've got to win games.
Yes, they do.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
That's the bigger question that you kind of presented it there, where it's like, do they just kind of mentally pull the plug a little bit? You know, Steph is having the quotes tonight about not waving the white flag, and, you know, there's still motivation. But, you know, they could probably, in their honest moments, stare in the mirror and realize, you know, even if you hold off the Rockets, like, where is this really going? And if their motivation level is lessened to the point that they just play transition defense like they did against the Pacers, you know, that should be an alarming performance considering this stage of the season. But it also might just be an informative performance that it's like they're just, you know, there is not a motivation level to go chase something that feels to them maybe unobtainable. And maybe Houston is thirsty to get the 10th seed, right? That would be an accomplishment for the Rockets. If they could, you know, chase down the Warriors, they would be going in the offseason like feeling real good about it, where I don't know that there's like this, you know, thirsty motivation for the Warriors to do that, knowing what might come a day after that. So, you know, maybe that does end up being the difference, just like the motivational difference.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they should be motivated because, I mean, they've the ones been saying if they get to the playoffs, they can make it happen. I mean, in a series, hey – if they are thinking, if we're not winning a championship, forget it. Like, that's crazy to me. That's just a wild thought from dudes who are champions. Like, it's
hard. I know what you're saying, and I don't think that they're openly like whatever. Yeah, I think it's just more like it's the subliminal, you know, unconscious, right? Like, that thirst that makes you sprint back in transition, that makes you enter the game just with an extreme level of focus, because you still have this grander belief that, like, the championship trophy is still obtainable at the end of the road. You know what that, you know, the difference in actually believing that that is possible and not changes from just those small marginal ways that you attack the season on a daily basis. You know,
it feels like the shame might be a motivator too. Like, the highest paid role in NBA history can't even make a play in. Like, at some point it feels like the embarrassment of that should be a factor. But more important, like, we're talking about, like, yeah, we're talking about like the vets, but should that hunger not come from Jonathan Kuminga, from Brandon Pajimski, from, you know, Andrew Wiggins, who, like, won one championship? It's not like he's been to five of these things. Like, it feels like, yeah, that while, I mean, Chris Paul has never won a championship. So it's like, I hear that with Steph, Draymond, and Clay, but I don't know why everybody would be thinking that way. You know, I don't know why anybody would be coaching that way or general manager that way, especially knowing that you've got these young guys who are your future who need the experience. Like, you're watching them need experience. You're literally watching them lose because they don't have the experience. So to me, it's just like a, like, I could see if Steph, Draymond, and Clay mentally let off the rope, but they ain't even those type of guys. If they do, it's because probably they just don't have it anymore. Draymond, or they feel like the people around them don't.
Draymond seemed pretty exasperated in his presser tonight.
I think that's about what's around him, though. Like, I feel like that's feeling, you know, you can watch them kind of getting irritated with each other. I mean, there was one play where Gary Payton is pointing and Clay doesn't get out on a shooter, and Gary Payton just like loses it. And you don't even see him do that because it's an open three. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't see GP react like that. But part of it is like, somebody on this team should be hungry. That's all I'm saying. Like, it should. It's not like it's the Brooklyn Nets with KG and them. But everybody's like 38. Like, I mean, I feel like this team has some youth and some, like, there should still be some hunger to get in the playoffs and see what it do. Like, I get what you're saying, but it's not that many dudes who I feel like should be even thinking like that. Like, oh well, whatever. We ain't gonna win a championship. Maybe yeah, Steph, again, like, Clay, and Draymond. That's it, really.
Yeah, but I mean, you kind of understand what I'm saying, that I don't think that's not like the front of the mind thought, but also there's just, I'm sorry, like, I also don't think they're sitting there going, you know, it would be great, like, if we could get Jonathan Kuminga 5 playoff games. Even if, yes, that would be beneficial to Jonathan Kuminga's growth. I just think that's just, I don't know. Like, there's just kind of like,
I mean, unless they're saying we're never going to win again, but if they're saying we want to win again, of course they want Kuminga to be better. But, or yeah. Unless, you know, to me, it just feels like there should be a lot of sense of urgency at this point from everybody. I don't think Steve Kerr showed enough urgency when that rested Steph part. But I also feel like they also give them reason not to. But to me, it's just like an over belief in what these other guys can do without Steph. I mean, we've seen it. They got 110, man. It's not even in the NBA these days. I mean, that's below. What are they average? Like 118?
110 ain't that bad. Against the Timberwolves. We're talking about maybe the best defensive team in the league.
But yeah, to me, that's what I'm saying. Against the Timberwolves, like, why do you, against the best defensive team in the league, why would you even believe you can play 9 minutes without your best offensive player? Like, you got to go into this game knowing, like, otherwise, sit them. Like, this idea that, like, oh, well, without Steph, we have, like, no. They got dogs on the perimeter. They got one of the best shot blockers in the game. Two of them, actually. Like, to me, this idea that, oh, yeah, we'll be fine. Like, no, this is the game you need to play Steph 36 minutes knowing what you're up against. Another game, maybe you don't play him at all. Like, to me, that's what I'm saying. Like, this idea of I can sit Steph for 9 minutes against the best defense in the league and we'll be fine. But it also was a 1-point game, like, towards the end. So there is some vindication for what Steve Kerr is saying.
Sure. All right. Anything else about this team, about this game before they move on to the Florida back-to-back?
I got a question for you. I've been thinking about this for a while, for 2 years now, matter of fact. How do the Warriors get Naz Reid?
They don't.
I know they don't, but, like, my goodness, is this dude really your, like, I watch a lot of Minnesota games, man. He spends a lot of crunch times on the end of the bench. Like, yeah, he's playing now because Cat's not there, but, man, that dude is good, man. I mean, at some
point,
man,
it's become, and maybe the point is now, but it's becoming a little bit more clear that maybe Towns ends up being the odd man out of this Minnesota,
right?
Especially with the money he makes. You know, Naz Reid's on a 3-year, $41 million deal. And, you know, I don't know what Towns does or doesn't bring back at this point. And
that
this
feels unsustainable, doesn't it? Like, this dude just being stuck on a bench, like, in, you know, late in games.
Like, yeah.
He's too good for that to me. That dude is good.
Yeah. But, I mean, to your original question. I mean, like, they're just
ain't no way Minnesota traded them to the Warriors. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. How do they pull it up? I mean, wouldn't he be like, he's like the perfect example of what they need.
Stretch big, like a, you know. I would say a stretch big who can also protect
the rim. Yeah. I mean, he is a good shot blocker. He's not a good, great defender, but he's a great shot blocker. He at least protects the rim.
Like, they 100% could use Nasri. That would be a great player for them to have. I don't think that he's like, you know, he's not what Chet Holmgren or something would have been, or what, you know, they dreamed of being at this point of his
career. Yeah, but that's like a pipe dream now. Like, you ain't getting that to top of the draft.
No, it's not.
Those guys cost a lot of money. But well, it's like middle guys that you can get.
Yeah,
who might have another level to him.
He's getting paid about what Kelly Olynyk makes, and his skill set is basically the Kelly Olynyk skill set. They tried to get Kelly Olynyk from Utah, but clearly didn't, offer enough for what Utah wanted, what Utah got from Toronto. Should they have? Should they not have? I don't know. I don't know that he completely changes the equation of this team. So
I think he does. I don't know. I don't think he puts him like above Denver, but I don't think they're 10 seed with somebody like Nasri. I mean, look how good they were when Dario made shots. Like, they were, well, I guess they weren't that good, but they were better, you know. I mean, now they don't have anybody.
I guess.
Like, they're hoping Draymond Green can make some. I don't think they're as far off as probably they even think. But also,
Sarge and Looney are buried right now, by the way.
Yeah, they're not playing at all. Yeah, they're done. And Moody too, right?
Yeah, Moody's back to DMPs on a nightly basis. You know, he's clearly guy number 10. They'll sprinkle him in. But I don't know. What do you think about that? You know, considering how he played when Wiggins was out for that stretch and who he's shown to be when he's given opportunity. Like, I understand why he gets bumped to 10th man and why the numbers crunch kind of gets him. But, you know, should Moses Moody be getting 0 minutes considering, like, what this team needs for its future?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think he should be playing. I think they should find a way for him to play. I don't think anybody ahead of him is that much greater. Like, if they're rolling, I get it. In fairness, I mean, Wiggins was pretty good defensively tonight, and I know he's not scoring in a way they need him to. I think he only took like 8 shots, but like, when he's locked in defensively, like, it matters. And Kuminga, like, he just needs all his minutes, man. He needs to struggle no matter what. So I get where there's not a spot. And look, even tonight, I don't think Podziemski even played 20 minutes. That's normally where you would go. But to me, like, Chris Paul takes those minutes because you're going 3 guards. And you know, Klay Thompson is becoming a guy who doesn't leave the floor very often. There's his minutes right there. I feel like you give some to Podziemski, give him some Podziemski minutes, give him some of Klay's minutes. Like, he should be getting something. But also, he wasn't good against Indiana either. So I don't get, what is this? I mean, look, GP2 was great defensively, but he missed the biggest layup of the night. I mean, he had 8 rebounds, 7 assists. Like, he was good. So it just feels like you got to be able to find some minutes for Moody. I know it's difficult, but he's good enough to do it. And some of the stuff that you need, like the hustle and all that, the corner threes, like, he tends to give it to you. But again, like, as you keep saying, none of this stuff is making a difference. I don't think playing Moody is making much of a difference, but I feel like he's good enough to play. Do you think they've told him, like, yeah, man, we're going to clear the decks for you in the future? All these dudes won't be back ahead of you. Do you think they told him something like that?
No, I don't, because I don't think that conversation happens right now. I think that is exit interview conversation, if you know what I mean. And I do think I would expect Moody's people, whatever, you know, the people who care most about Moody's future, which include Moses Moody, to get some level of clarity. You know, he's technically extension eligible this summer, although he very much profiles as a guy who, for all, you know, it would not probably make sense for him to extend right now. It would make sense for him to try to play himself into a bigger payday next season. And
before he hits restricted free agency, like wanting to be in a place, whether that's with the Warriors or whether it's not, that is giving him guaranteed rotation minutes. And again, stature in the league wise, he can't be a guy that necessarily comes out and demands it. But just like when Kuminga basically did that, there was a lot of people like, you're Jonathan Kuminga, you can't come out and just demand things like this. But then, I don't know. It's tough, but if they're gonna duck under the tax to get out of the repeater potentially, if they're gonna kind of reconfigure their roster and rotation heading into next season, Clay's future's obviously up in the air. Chris Paul certainly is. Wiggins even potentially. There maybe is a line for Moses Moody to get more playing time, you know, and we'll see. But again, might depend on how this season ends. A lot of stuff all around the league depends on how the season ends. And right now the Warriors season is heading towards an ending that would spark change, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's money related. It's happening anyway. I don't know what it would take for them not to do their path. Like a first round exit ain't going, you know what I'm saying? Like whatever it is, the money is just crazy. So
yeah,
I think we've crossed that point. What would it take? A finals run?
for them not blowing? To, like,
just to say, all right, let's run it back. Let's keep, you know, I mean, obviously like Clay's got to sign and all that, but let's get the money down.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Cause you know, I can't imagine they're going to be going in next year. Also, you know, Joe Lacob's not going to do a press conference saying, hey, we're rebuilding. We're not really trying to win as much this season. It's more about getting the tax down, even if that ends up being what they do. So, I don't really know how you duck the tax and improve the team. How? So,
that's tough.
These are questions that we're going to explore over the, you know, 3 weeks from now. Although it just feels like it's getting closer and more obvious every game.
Oh, man, I wish I was in Minnesota tonight. Oh, I would love some snow.
Oh, I thought you meant because you were going to come in the press conference and I demand answers.
Oh, no. I got to stop warring with people on Twitter.
You do. Why are you going back?
Because it really drives me crazy. Like it. You know, the whole Bay Area media is soft. You got to ask you questions, man. That's all we do is ask questions. Like you're telling me, you don't ask questions. Like it's a crazy thought. So I don't know. It feels I'm done. I'm never doing it again. I'm stopping. But
well, there's an idea that
my goat
questions will then. Force him to make the decisions that.
Yes, like I don't like. Where does that come from? Like, oh, the other thing that gets me, other markets would have been killing them. Like, you know, the teams are still bad. Like, bad teams are not better because quote unquote tough questions are asked. They're bad because they're not good teams. Like, that's not. It's not like, ooh, they would kill them in New York if they did this. You know what? Knicks suck every year. It's the first time they've been actually. Like, really good. Like, that's why the city's going crazy. And it ain't because people ask Tibbs tough questions. It's because they got a better team. Like, this idea that somehow Slater is the reason and Marcus is the reason because we are asking the tough questions. Like, it's such a ridiculous idea that it gets me irritated. And I feel like I got to defend the profession. Plus, you're like the best in the nation. Like, what are you telling me? Like, come take his job then since you know everything. I don't know. I shouldn't get so defensive about it, but I do. Let me stop.
Well, that'll do it for this week's episode. maybe we'll talk after the Miami or Orlando game. Maybe we'll do a plus minus. Tim Kawakami hopping on. Let's tentatively plan for a live room after the Orlando game.
All right. They're going. They're winning the next four on this road trip, just so you know. I'm booking that.
Yeah. Okay. That's a take.
4-1 on this road trip. Watch.
I think 3-2 is in the realm of possibility because I do think you get Charlotte, San Antonio. You got to get one of the Florida games. But he's calling 4-1.
Wow. I think they go to Miami with a reckless abandon, and then catch Orlando off guard, and then win out the last two. I'm calling it, man. 4-1. I'm calling it.
the Goliath Magic are going to overlook the puny Warriors.
You know what I'm saying? The 10th seed.
All right.
I also think Orlando's beatable. But
yes. I mean, the Kings literally just beat them yesterday in Orlando. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk to y'all later in the week.
Deuces.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.